restart your player. Did you and Antoon have some kind of text communication going on successfully via Telnet in real time? I can't hear you. That mic must not be turned on. Which mic is it? Is it turned on?
Wilbert? Okay, that hum is back.
I know, we've got weird stuff going on over here.
Hello?
Our wireless mic died. For no particular reason that we're capable of determining.
Test.
But we've got you. You can't hear anything.
Can you try tapping on one of those mics?
The buzzer is horrible. Do you want me to call back and try to get another connection?
Test.
Can you hear that?
Not real well, no.
Tapping on the mics?
Very barely.
Okay, let me change you to another output.
Much better. Up.
How about now? Say something into that mic.
Baby, you know.
How do you hear that?
I can kind of hear him.
I think it might be coming through the handset. Let me try covering the handset.
Baby.
Yeah?
Yep.
Good?
Yep.
That was really loud. But
yeah. There's still that bad hum, though.
How bad is it?
It's annoying. It makes it really almost rough to listen to.
Let me try this one.
When in doubt, go meta.
That's much better. That is much better.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk to the microphone now.
Talk to the mic now.
Does anyone know any Harry White songs?
That's perfect. There we go.
Okay. So we've got a good feed now. Excellent. And it's a good level?
It seems to be, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to unplug the handset and we're going to get Antoon to keep singing while we listen to our real player.
Okay.
Okay. Look at me, it's like the voice of God in this microphone. You know, I find it sort of strange that from here it sounds like we're getting a lot of amplification, but what's coming off the board is not very high level at all.
Certainly better than anything in the first half. Ben?
Are you just not the worth eating if you try one of those.
Yeah, I had them a couple of times during the interview.
Amazing to think that they, at one point, were in Switzerland and now they're here.
Test 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Test 1, 2, 3. With all of the equipment, we have to unplug it all right at 4, where we don't get that up time tonight. Test 1, 2. Intern has this. Test, 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 test. Test, 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 test. Anyone want to take over for me?
Test, test, test. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Test, test, test. Are you okay? Test, test. What did you have this, for this lunch? You got a good thing? Just testing the microphone. Testing the microphone. Test, test, test. Am I done?
Oops.
Test, 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 test. Test, 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 test. Thank you, Membership Advisory Committee, 2nd March. Welcome back for another day and its work. Review of this season discussion. Done. Closing remarks and comments. Done. Test, 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 test.
Now, a lot more like us. Most of the time, it's going to be like,
may be an extra. Well, I don't know, actually. I'm not sure.
Here's the objective. I'd like to be able to submit on Thursday Thursday, if not tomorrow, to the ICANN board a written piece built off the foundation that you have been doing for us that includes the last few days, all the deliberations and input. So let's say we do that, and now come back to this afternoon. I wanted to do a couple things. I wanted to go, at the risk of going back over some ground, see if anybody's changed their mind on any fundamental things that they would like to say. Secondly, take a look at other issues that we haven't discussed yet and decide what to do with them this afternoon, either discuss them or set up a time to work on them, perhaps by telephone and email. And then I think what we want to do is conclude by at least 4 o'clock, because I'm told they have to take the equipment down at 4. So as a generalization, does that sound like a good plan? Okay. Now, Izumi, you want to...
There are some new faces I've seen back there or up here. What do you do?
Introduce them. You are a host with the mostest there. Then.
We think the battery's dead. It's difficult people to give up.
No, because we need to go to the microphone to the real audio feed to the rest of the world.
Well, why don't you just ask the 2 or 3 people who are new to come on up and introduce themselves?
Could you do that?
Yeah. These two fellows are new, the woman is new, and perhaps the man standing in the rear is new.
I'm Ken Gavranovic with Interland. We're a web host internet company over in the USA, so we wanted to come by and see what was going on. We're interested in the registrar and registry part of the discussions you guys would be having.
Atlanta, Georgia. My name is Rick Platone. I'm the director of sales for the same company, Interland Incorporated.
My name is Kenneth Kuki. I'm a reporter with Communications Week International in Paris, France.
Hi, I'm Ramita Sharma. I'm from the Asia-Pacific Development Information Program, a United Nations initiative based in Kuala Lumpur.
Thank you very much. Welcome to all of you. And this is an open meeting, so you can just watch us with our work. And if we get into some of the more substantial issues this afternoon, if that's how this unfolds, we'll include you for comments so that you'll be able to interact with us. I don't think you want to jump in on our administrative work, but you're free to do that as well. Let's just talk a minute, Jonathan and Diane, about how we can, just a little bit more on how we can get the something in writing trimmed up here over the next couple days. What are your thoughts?
Do you want something short that would just summarize what we have done here in Singapore that you can then reference the larger document for footnotes or hyperlinks or whatever? Or we could, I think that's one choice. The other would actually be go into the large report and where we've made changes or recommendations.
I tend to prefer that without thinking about the effort on your part that's involved. I'll tell you why I prefer that. I would like to, this is in the spirit of the way I started yesterday morning, I would like to deliver something to Roberts and Esther and the board members.
The heavier the better?
Yeah, I would, because I think we've put a lot of effort into this. I think to present it in a more formal way, even with its issues within it, we would be very clear about where the board was, and that's a bit of an effort, you know, that we either had consensus or we did not, and if we did not, how do we represent the degree of consensus or non-consensus? Nobody's trying to hide from that. I hope we could be very, very clear about that, because in the explanation of the different views is wisdom. And so, but I would like that included. But what I'm saying is, if we could give them that, then I think Mike and Esther and the board have something they can start to chew on as to how they're going to take our recommendations and begin to reduce them to some recommendations that can go to the board to be voted upon. That doesn't mean that we end. I know there's another chapter here about our continuing participation, which we should also talk about, but I'm just talking about getting this document in shape by Thursday.
Well, we have produced from yesterday and the day before the notes that hopefully everybody has seen, and they're also available on the table over there. We can take a look at that and see, you know, even with the next few minutes, if there's feeling that that's a good way of representing the kinds of arguments and discussions that have been had and where there's consensus and where there isn't. Now, that's a little bit of a temporal blow-by-blow. It's basically a capitulation of the meeting as it happened.
Right, it's not integrated.
Right, and we could try to work that in, however, to Diane's excellent skeleton of the preliminary report, so that we've got then the arguments as they happen put into the right sections.
That would be my hope.
It's organized.
That would be my
hope. A lot of the arguments are already in there. A lot of what we've discussed is there.
But so
the new material is
coming. Yeah, if that's the case, then perhaps the effort to put in the new material may not be that great. I'm looking at you because you know better than I.
Yeah, I don't get to eat tonight. It's fine, I've eaten my way through Singapore already. I can skip a meal.
So we'll have me and our staff will get together with Diane and anybody else that wants to and try to hammer out something, and then if there's some way we can circulate that as quickly as possible. I don't know if everybody's on email while here. That's obviously the cheapest way to circulate it, but we could try to print out something too just so people can take a look and add whatever they might, but we could at least generate something.
Yeah.
Quickly.
Okay, well let's... Will you think about how we're going to get organized to do that, because some of the Berkman people are very much a part of that, as well as Diane.
We should gather all that material from the last 3 days.
Right.
And before we separate, go down the list and verify it point by point, make sure that we have what we really agreed to.
Yeah, now that's a little tricky because we could take each one of those back right now in a summary form to the board. I don't know if everybody has the stamina for that, see if anybody's changed their mind or want to clarify any opinions on that, you know, that have been rendered. There's a difference between what we say, what we thought we understood, and then what ends up in paper, and I don't want anybody to feel that we didn't accurately represent it, but we all understand what happens when you reduce something to a more formal document, that something can get lost.
There's today's.
Yeah, exactly. The notes the notes from yesterday and the day before are a good example of that boiling down process, and we can at least get a sense of if we're doing it, you know, 80%, 90%, or 20% effectively.
Yeah. When could you have that to all of us for review?
You mean even today's notes?
Uh-huh.
I suppose we could have it...
What's our... How much time do we need?
3, yeah.
We need 3.5 hours, so... That's until about 7 or 8 o'clock.
So I suppose by...
I don't need to be... I can sit down. I mean, as soon as we break up here, I can...
It sounds to me like by tomorrow morning we could have it, right?
Start plugging them in.
So by tomorrow morning?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, who has the list of items? Is it on a screen somewhere that we can look at in terms of things we said we would like to talk about and some things that we didn't get to? We had a list when we began yesterday morning. Wendy or Ben, can you pull that up? In the very beginning, yesterday morning, we had a list of items to discuss, and remember, we were checking them off. This was the document that began how to structure an open meeting. That's it. Okay. It seemed to me from this morning that the, and I invite now open discussion on this, I think the greatest divergence of opinion on the panel was around fees. The idea of zero to some kind of contribution, I'm sorry, some kind of fee structure to the contribution model. I'm just saying on a relative basis, I thought that was the one that was the most diverse.
Fees and maybe the role of organizations as voting members.
Yeah.
Chuck Bohm said that the first question was very incentive for me because as I understood it, he was asking if an SO creates an own at-large member,
yeah,
how that would interfere with our one. Maybe we think about that. Because this is really, in reality, a grenade. It doesn't seem so, but it is. Should I explain it?
Keep going.
The SO at the moment have two drafts running. The, well, so-called Paris draft and Washington something draft. And in the Paris draft, there is an idea, by the way, I'm not fully informed anymore, but I think the general idea is this, that they have an at-large membership. And as soon as 5% of this at-large membership comes together to a party, they build a constituency. That's the one part. The other part is that registries and registrars are already constituencies. And they had some provisions that they will have some minimum vote or some 50%. I'm not sure about these, but they have some guaranteed rights. So the construction, as I remember, is that way, that they always will keep the majority or something like that. If they suddenly do not longer have the possibility, or if the at-large members are not there, then it is possible, in my view, that their whole building is a little bit falling like cards, because then it's only registrars and registries left on the NSO, well, and that's a problem. So what I'm saying is, and now I'm subjective, not objective, yeah? It could be they are using the at-large members as an excuse. So this is what I consider a problem. Now our question would be...
Excuse for what?
Excuse to building an DNSO organization saying, look, we are democratic, we have at-large members, what do you want? In reality, that's only an excuse to having these at-large members and allowing 5% to come together to make something, but in reality they have 50% always. So, this is not our problem. But our problem is what happens if they have at-large members and we have at-large members. Do we cross-checking? Do we allow double voting and all this?
Well, there's also the IETF, which has tons of members also.
These are not individual, individual members. You always have the case that an organization is there. I am a member of an organization and I am also an individual member. That's always the case. I'm speaking about to be individual members in two parties.
But we have this problem not just with DNSO, but also with IETF and the PSO.
Siegfried, I may be missing something here, but what we're trying to do is get a broad base of in individual members of the at-large membership as we can. They'll come from a variety of circumstances. Some will be very active in the SOs, and some will not. And we have made no provision to date to prevent that. I'm talking about individuals.
What was the last sentence?
In our individual membership that we expect for at-large, we want that to be as large as it can be, but we have made no provision to exclude individuals from that.
Yeah, so that is the point. Do we see a problem having individuals, not individuals as part of an organization, so individuals rolled in both?
I think that's going to exist. In other words, you can be a very active participant in the IETF, end up in the...
That's not the thing. Sorry.
...aiding in the protocol organization.
What the hell is it different?
If I am participating in IETF, which I am from time to time, I vote in IETF, and somehow with other 2,000, and something is decided, and possibly IETF then will have one vote or something like this. I'm a part of an organization. But in this time I have double votes, obviously. I vote as an individual in an SO, and direct vote, yeah? What a vote which is filtered. Is the difference clear?
Sure. Say, I just don't still see the problem because...
Bob, Bart?
I don't either. They can be also... in everything we've discussed so far, they could always also be an individual member of the at-large membership.
I'm just recalling the archives. When we started this work, we did see a problem in that. It is written, because at that time we had the feeling the SOs would have an individual membership, and we had a problem about this. It's written there, so I'm just recalling it.
You see, we all began, it seems all these 3 days, we began with the basic premise that SOs already stand sufficiently represented. Therefore, the need to have an at-large membership which is different from the representation of the SO. And that's the underlying spirit behind the ICANN bylaws. Now, if we are going to allow individuals who are already members of associations affiliated to SOs, I think the fundamental premise on which we are working goes.
No, he's saying the reverse.
I'm saying the reverse. I mean, I'm taking a different perspective.
Yes.
What I'm trying to say is we need not give them a double benefit. We do not want to make them doubly privileged. Let that privilege be equally distributed through everywhere. Why should individuals who are associated to SOs get a double privilege, a double benefit?
Weren't you there with us yesterday during the Mr. T discussion?
That's different.
No, we brought him across as an individual.
Yeah, we did an individual vote as well.
We brought him across as an
individual. Yes, an individual at large, but he was not individual at SO.
He was a legal person at SO.
He was not a natural person at SO. It's clear what he says. A person suddenly has two votes, obviously. So, either we agree on that and we say, okay, that's life.
Remember what they have two votes on. Their votes are different. They have votes in the SO over some process or procedure or change that has to do with names, addresses, or protocol. In the at-large, they have a vote to elect a member of the board. How that member of the board is going to act over time, we don't know.
That's right, but the same is true for companies. So why did we exclude companies from have in SOs and at large something to say? It's the same rule for individuals.
You're getting close now to the equator model.
Go, John. I do remember this coming up yesterday, and we pulled up discussion 4 from then. Should at-large membership exclude SO members? And as I recall, it was more on organizations or entities. Can they cross over? At some point, somebody said, well, what about individuals? And at least discussion 4 up here represents it as... Provident actually says at this point, and the scribe could have it wrong, you argued that a person who represented an organization in SO should also have the right to vote as themselves in the at-large.
Right.
Otherwise, it's discriminatory.
Right.
Provident, he's got it. That was you, actually. Did you change your mind?
Yeah. See, the discrimination is okay. But now, seeing, one can always get vice by events. Whether are we going to allow discrimination of a smaller people, or are we going to allow benefit, double benefit to a larger quantity of people? It's the lesser evil that shall prevail. You see, you have to choose between the devil and the deep sea. And I would rather like to choose something. No.
I think... suppose I, you know, join SO as an individual. My intention of joining SO is different from when I joined at large, you know, as at large member, because I would be concentrating on whatever SO issues are, and represent, you know, the board of directors, which whom I elect from the SO platform, belong to that, you know, that.
Would you agree that the same then is also valid for companies or associations? They also join from different reasons. I don't see a difference.
D has a way to fix that. The organizations from the at-large membership model.
Oh, it solves it all.
It just eliminates that as an issue.
The problem that I remember raising was we don't have access to the registration records of all these different organizations. And so that's a problem. How can we enforce it against one and not the others?
If we did want to do it, somebody suggested that what you would do is when you join ICANN, you check a box at the bottom of your form that says which of the following 4 bins would you wish to place yourself in. Please do not check more than one or it will be returned to you within 6 weeks to, you know, clean it up. And then you would pick one of the 3 SOs or the 4th category of at-large. So that's one way of doing it if you actually managed the membership of the SOs through ICANN. So then it just regresses to the question of which do you want? Do you want people to be able to join both? To me, at least, I could see seeing that form and not being offended, not feeling it unfair that I had to choose one of them. On the other hand, if I am joining the protocol support organization because I know something about it, I'm wanting to be helpful there, or I even professionally have some reason to want to be there, and then when I get home at night, I use the internet for fun and feel I'm sort of an at-large member, I think this is Conchata's point, I want to be able to belong to both. So.
The problem is only for voting for directors. I may want to join the DNSO, but I may, because I want to participate in discussions revolving around SOs, but I may, and I will probably accept a choice between voting for DNSO directors and voting for at-large directors. So if we could separate actual participation to decisions and to policy making, which is one thing that people at large do not do, and voting for directors, and as an individual I would have to choose there. I think this is perfectly acceptable as an exclusion. The exclusion couldn't be, well, if you're at large, I'm sorry, you cannot contribute to policy making. That is really a problem. But if you have to choose between in which category are you going to vote for board members, that seems acceptable.
Again, the third time, would you then agree that the same is valid for organizations?
Okay, I would agree with that. I have no problem because I am absolutely convinced that a professional organization will want to be voting where it is less diluted, and that means within the SOs. So I would go with that because I think there's no danger at all.
We had Chuck Gomes and I discussed at lunch, if you were a domain holder but not particularly interested, why would you not choose at large? Because you get to elect six directors there instead of three for a DNSO.
It's a matter of
choosing.
I have no problem. So I'm not worried. I'm just saying we could ask them to choose which directors they vote for, and they get to cast one vote or one set of votes either for at large or for SO.
But that also presumes that we have some authority over this. We certainly don't over IETF right. and the PSO. We certainly don't over the ASO.
Anyway, this is the case, and it's a matter of what we want. After, we might have implementation problems, but this is also the case with the exclusion that we devised yesterday and that we were unanimous about for membership. And let me remind you that we realized that the exclusion of SO, of organizations belonging to SOs, did not relate to the fact that we were giving them voting rights. We realized in the discussion yesterday that even if we did not give organizational members a voting right, since we had to give them something else, which was probably a committee, we did not want organizations who already had plenty of forums in the SOs to join at large. So the problem of exclusion exists whether you give organizations voting rights or not. There is no consistency problem here. So again, I'm not sure we're really hunting the right animal here.
Any other comments by the members of the committee?
I have two. One is the following, just to check whether we are seeing the picture the same way. Yesterday we were discussing that we had, on the one side we had at large membership, and on the other side we had the group of SOs. And we would think of a scheme such as the one Jonathan was mentioning, where an organization would pick whether it wanted to belong to an SO or not, and then it would be excluded from the at-large membership.
Right.
So that there would be an implicit process of getting onto the ICANN bandwagon through the at-large membership, and later on maybe deciding which SO to join, for example. Okay. So that we might consider then at-large membership as a kind of initial buffer where you would kind of sit for a while to see where you wish it to go later on or whatever. When you think about an at-large membership within an SO, like the NSO people are thinking about, actually, you're thinking the same way. So my question is, if we are right, is it necessary for the NSO to have an at-large membership within the organization, or we should propose, we should suggest them that we are already considering that role within our at-large membership?
Right.
I think there's a distinction. I think there is a big distinction, and again, it is participation to policy. The problem, from what I understand from the DNSO applications, the problem is that if you don't have an at-large membership for the DNSO, you have a lot of people who want to participate but do not have the right status, who just cannot have a say in policy making. So again, you have to separate policy discussions and policy making and election of directors. And if you do that, I think you solve a lot of problems. Because the problem of the at-large membership of DSOs is, how do I join DSO if I want to discuss new GDLDs? If there's no at-large, I cannot, because I'm not part of any entity that has direct activity in registration or service provision or whatever. So this is one thing. Now, I'm not sure we should say at-large is a buffer. I think I should say if we want to be able to do exclusion, you probably have a notion that is ICANN membership, and then maybe it's four SOs, or maybe it's three SOs, and then the rest
who are not SOs remain at large. But you have membership and all of these people become members. And then some of them do not tick the SO boxes.
And are at large.
At least for election
directors. Why don't you consider being a member of at large as being able to participate in SO discussions?
Okay, could be. And I find this idea of Tadon not so bad. It's not a difference, it isn't an evolution. Somebody joins at large, I'm not now very theoretically, joins at large and then sees in which other direction he wants to participate. That makes sense for me. Which would mean also from practical reasons it would be one database. People would join at large first and then could switch or whatever. But that changes a little bit our building, yeah? A little bit.
But I don't know that we can enforce this as to all the SOs, so we're penalizing the ones we can, in that sense.
Right.
Which may be the way we are, but it seems a little bit unfair.
Greg?
Well, I'm rather confused by a lot of this discussion. I must admit, there's a concern that people should not have two votes, I think, is the vote in an SO and a vote in that layer. I don't see the problem with that. I mean, voting in an SO is voting
for... Can you bring up the microphone?
Sorry? Yeah. Is it not on?
No, bring it up.
I see that voting in a supporting organization, as a member of a supporting organization, is to elect an executive or a committee which is going to formulate policy, among other things, and also appoint, depending upon how the SO structures itself, directors, SO directors. Becoming an at-large member is to elect at-large directors, pure and simple. That's all
it is.
And I don't see a conflict if someone wants to join both. As I think may have been Sigrid mentioned, to participate in a technical discussion of policy formulation in one forum and to vote for an at-large director in another. And it doesn't worry me at all if someone likes to join and have a vote in both cases. But the vote in both cases is very dilute. I think we should always remember that. It's very dilute, hopefully, because the membership will be large in both cases. So I really don't see that it's a significant issue.
I think I have some pragmatic question that we are all assuming that the election is taking place at the same time from three SOs and the at-large members, or do we do it separately? Or what?
No.
And if you're doing it separately, then depending on the result of one to the other, say like some want to run for the director from SO and not elected, then he can come and run from at large. Mm-hmm. Things like that could easily happen.
Sure.
Is that the assumption? Or with depending on, and I was thinking to have I agree with Daniel that it's better to separate the policy making decision and the voting for the directors. But then voting for directors, I mean, I was for the, to try to eliminate some double voting, I was thinking. And one way is to make it simultaneously and separate. I mean, you can only vote for one, but if it's not the assumption, then things will change.
I don't think it is the assumption, vis-a-vis, that it would happen concurrently. I think they'll be on different cycles. But you have to raise the question, what would be wrong? I mean, what's the evil? What are we worried about a person who was a candidate for an SO but didn't make it and then ran as a candidate for at-large because they had support and people thought their qualifications were...
I'm not saying it's bad or good.
But no, that seems to be very acceptable. As long as it's clear to the electorate that the person's affiliations.
Yeah, we've asked for that as part of the candidacy. Well, to an extent we have.
Not what SO affiliation, they may not.
Well, we could, but we said to respond to 4 or 5
Unless you consider that a
questions. We could just ask it as a question.
It would not be a secret.
No, it wouldn't be a secret, hopefully, because people would know. Jonathan?
We could even ask that question of at-large members as well, should it be the case that members aren't restricted from having both. And that way, if you did your census a few months in to see how the at-large membership was shaping up, you would know if 90% of your at-larges also happened to be members of one SO or another, you'd have a different idea about how well at-large was functioning than if it weren't the case. And in a way, by letting them go in and just indicate that, it's a useful data gathering function to see just how independent your at-large base is going to be. But with that said, it seems to me that because there are so many unanswered questions about what's going to shake out in the SOs and even how similar they'll be to each other, even if there are members of a given SO, their ballot may not directly elect directors the way it's all assumed that a ballot will do so in the at-large membership. Given all that, this really may be an instance in which they should take the first step, and then, and only then, does it make sense to think hard about how to craft how the at-large membership will relate to the SO memberships. I mean, it might be that there just won't even be any, and then this entire discussion is moot, or there'll be one, but they won't vote in a way that makes us feel that it's double voting, or, you know, who knows? So this seems like one area in which it actually is perfectly noble to punt and see what lands in the other zone, and then we can try to make sure that anybody excluded in that zone is...
Should we go to the DNSO meeting now?
Yeah, that's right. We can assure the DSO
join them.
Yeah. Let me bring my friend Mr. Quainer back into the discussion.
Okay. Actually, I favor that we don't look too closely at what the SOs are doing. Our role is fairly well spelled out. We are supposed to be user-oriented. And so we should just focus on the needs of the user, irrespective of what the SOs are going to do. Now, I recall I was not even concerned about people crossing from the other side, because the model that I wanted was only individual. So whether they somewhere else or not was immaterial. Now, but once you allow companies to also be part, and individuals be part, let's just treat that as the pot we have to work with and forget to some extent whether they belong to that side or not. I mean, I'm trying to open up a little bit, saying that even the requirement of organizations not being SOs may be complicating our own decision here. I mean, once we're separating, looking at them as at large, they qualify to come in as at large, then we should just allow them to be there.
Well, especially if you drop the requirement that they had to be in one versus the other, and then went to your model, which is only individuals can vote, you'd have the simplest, easiest approach.
No checks.
What would really be so wrong with that?
He was ahead of me, but I have an answer to your question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pavan. I didn't realize you were
Suppose you allow people to cross-register. And suppose that a regulation is proposed in the DNSO that says no new domains. We will not issue any more. They're enough. Now, in the DNSO, that might be a body that's full of domain holders. And they say, yay, we got ours. Nobody else needs any. So we're voting for this. And they say we're going to elect only candidates, our three directors, who will support that platform. The whole purpose of the at-large was to provide a voice for the people who didn't have that inside track already. They didn't qualify for representation in these other organizations. If you allow all those domain holders to come over to the at-large, you know, they're going to do the same thing over there. And then that 5% of the population that doesn't have a domain doesn't have a voice.
Well, it depends on who the candidates are.
But the ICANN board, is going to make decisions that are restrictive in that nature, and I would suggest that the history of bodies like this is that people do put the common good ahead of, you might say, their parochial interests. And I can't really believe that any elected board would move to a resolution of that nature.
Have all those people over at DSA, right?
But I don't see why.
Yeah, that they want it as easily as they want.
Well, I also think it's not an unlikely resolution that the NSO would pass because they're making their money out of issuing its main names.
You see, my argument yesterday at discussion 4, if you could go back, was basically that we should not discriminate. That argument holds even good in this model, more so in this model. We are having two chunks, two broad chunks. The SO individuals at large, at SO at large, okay? These are two broad categories that we were not called upon, nor were we called upon to decide. These were categories that were given to us. So it's already a fact accompli. Now, if we are going to allow individuals of SOs to come and also be a part of at-large in an individual membership model, then you are discriminating all those individuals who are part of the at-large but who cannot go and vote into the SO. And the population of individuals at at-large who cannot go to the SO is double or triple the times of the population of people who are individuals, who are members of the SO, who can come and vote here. Therefore, the discrimination against, you are giving two chances, two votes, two times to vote to people, to individuals who are members of this, of the SO, to vote at SO and also to the at-large. But are we giving two chances to the at-large? People who are users, who are not even members of the SO, they're only getting one chance. Why the discrimination? Yeah.
That could be why they want an at-large in the SO, which would be fine with me.
Yeah, actually, I don't have any problem with a person being a member of all three SOs and being a member of at-large. I mean, I might do that.
Probably pay fees. It's quite a few fees. But to be happy with that bargain you get on the individual member side.
It's something I do not understand. Yesterday we were very much concerned to have no double voting of companies. And suddenly, if the same happens with individuals, we are taking it easy? Are we doing this differently? That I have a problem to understand.
But that was yesterday's discussion.
Okay. Yeah, okay, so the question at the end here would be, we started with these easy-going questions. Are we prepared to treat both differently? And second, which way?
Well, I could be moved on my position from yesterday to the Quainer model and invite organizations to join. Maybe it's 1B, provide some forum for the user domain name holders to participate but have only individuals vote. And I don't care where the individuals come from.
Since we don't know what's going on the other side, we only know a little bit about the NSO, is there any guarantee that they will say include the members from at large, or there might be no possibility that they exclude those who are already registered at large members cannot join any other SO? They can do that technically.
Well,
or I can both say no.
But you have to think about their processes, and again, I agree, we don't know what they're saying, but most of these organizations charge for membership, and sometimes fairly stiff in terms of anything we've talked about, $300 a meeting, four meetings a year. I think that's pretty expensive. We're talking about, if you want to do that, you're always free. Anybody's free to join them if you want to pay. One of the other things I think is going to happen is I would suspect that from time to time, the SOs would want to appeal to the at-large membership just to keep them informed as to about what the issues were, which would also be good. But again, remember, all the at-large membership is doing is electing members to the board.
I want to take the example of my own Nick in France. In France now, there is total antagonism between internet professionals on the one side and internet users, including companies, on the other. And there is a clear design on the part of the internet professionals to exclude all users, including companies, from designing the domain names policy for .fr. This kind of situation will arise. It has arisen several times in several meetings. The purpose of that large, again, is to have the users represented. And please remember how many comments, I know it's not a sample, really found that excluding organizations was very exotic in the few comments that we heard. And some of them moderated themselves because, as I told you, they had submitted formal comments saying they wanted 10 votes per organization, up to 10. So they just kept it a little bit more subdued because they thought that there was consensus towards something more moderate and they couldn't really break it. But we will have that kind of situation. Now, there is a numbers problem if we say we don't care about crossover either for organizations. If you take the number of registries plus the number of potential registrars plus the number of ISPs, who are all very motivated from having their say and the biggest possible say in ICANN, they number more than all the at-large members we have been considering since the last 3 days. Okay, there are about 5,000 players in that shield. So, okay, they join, the at-large members, and ICANN is totally, through its directors, is totally directed by internet professionals. So, obviously we can hardly have that, and we have to find ways to prevent that.
Well, Daniel, I'm trying to understand you. So you're changing your view from yesterday?
No. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm definitely not. I'm trying to find the ways. Again, I still find that not having organizations clearly represented is very strange and will look very strange. And I am quite sure that we will be joined by real-world people in thinking so. That is not internet cyber-contra people, but real-world people in thinking that this is very strange.
Just to review the bidding, we didn't say that organizations would be excluded.
No, but even with a vote, I still think that this is going to be very strange. And again, anyway, we said that with or without a vote, you needed to exclude them. We did say it.
From one side to the other.
Yes, with or without voting. So we were with that problem, whatever happens. Now, for individuals, I would be rather comfortable with different rules. I don't really care. Because the point with individuals, first of all, a lot of them will be representatives of their organizations in the SOs. And this does not count in our crossover problem. And then the point of at-large, I meant, was to be slightly skewed towards individuals, and this is what we do when we provide organizations with just one vote. Okay. So, skewing it a little more, saying, okay, if you're an individual, it's not exactly a double vote that you get, even if you're in an SO and an at-large. It's two votes in two different quarters. You're diluted in two different ways. It's not like you get two votes for the same people. It's not that. So, you could say, okay, I am prepared to support the fact that I have double standards. Is that so terrible? Is that worse, having double standards, than not having organizations clearly represented? I'm not sure. And we could evaluate that.
You're also a step away from saying, well, why not have organizations not have a vote? You were going to have an exclusion. Don't even worry about that. Just have organizations but not have a vote. Let the individuals vote.
again, they could
But again, it has, clearly it has not much to do with this. Because you have to exclude the organizations from being in both.
So if you exclude them, you exclude them, exclude all organizations. Because underneath it all, the individuals are still there. And there are some considerations here. I mean, whenever you introduce constraints and regulations, in the worldwide organization that we see operating, it's going to be almost impossible to police them. Organizations will vote through an individual. How do we know the individual is not voting for an organization? What's an organization anyway? It's a collection of individuals. If I am a member of an SO and I'm not allowed to vote, what about my wife or my children? Or someone next door that I pay a few dollars and say, would you vote for me? So, and ICANN would never be able to police it. The SOs would never be able to police it. So my view is that we should have guidelines, but an absolute minimum of restrictions. Of course, we, in most cases, we don't go to police.
By guideline, what do you mean? What kind of guideline are you thinking?
Sorry,
By guideline, what's that?
Well, my view is that when one is looking at identification of members, for example, of at-large members, one will issue guidelines. You have to be of mature age or an adult in your country, etc. But I think the only way you can seek verification is that the applicant for membership affirms that they comply. I don't support the idea of sending in identification qualifications or verifications, but you ask people to affirm. Most people will affirm. Most people are honest. Someone who wishes to, you know, a juvenile may wish to register as an adult. So what? I think it's very hard for us to stop it, so we put guidelines, but have absolute minimum of regulations that we can't actually police. And when it comes to restricting membership between SOs, when we still don't know how they're going to structure their membership, and at large, I see very little point because any regulations you come up with can be easily bypassed by people who wish to.
Okay.
But if guidelines, then that's
let me try this thing at the committee and start being arbitrary again. How many people on this committee support any individual being able to be an individual member of the at-large membership? How many of on this committee support any individual being able to be an individual member of the at-large membership?
So long as they exist, right?
So long as one requirement that we had.
So this is in favor of crossover?
Yeah.
Well, that was the basic assumption, huh?
No. Do you support crossover for individuals?
No.
All I'm doing is
random. No, he didn't say it.
Don't make it tricky, please.
Okay, I want to see the show of hands here. People on the committee, we'll invite your comments here in a sec. Support the idea that any individual can be an individual member, didn't say organization, it's an individual member of the at-large membership. How many of you support that?
May I add something? Also, if he's a member of an individual at an SO, in an SO.
Right.
Here's why I'm
asking the question, because yesterday we were all in favor of this. And I just want to make sure that we still are in favor of it. So let's just raise our hands if you're still in favor of what I said.
There's a few waivers I can see.
Wow. Well, so what's your proposal, Izumi?
I'm still trying to figure out what's coming next.
I'm not sure how to handle individuals differently from companies. That's my problem.
Well, we have an answer for that, but we'll get to that in a moment.
Let me add a comment, which is the following. In principle, I'm in favor of that. Okay. But if we get stuck in a situation where we're going to have 1,000 members in the first year, where half of them are with PSO or the NSO, it's a different matter.
Well, you'll probably have that, and all we're asking them to do is help to elect an at-large membership with all of the other constraints.
That's completely different.
It's not to reinforce the supporting organization.
It depends on not only the crossover issue, but how do you really make the decision process or voting process, or, you know. So it's interrelated. So to me, just saying that one doesn't really make sense at this point.
Yeah. Well, that's what
so it's conditionally yes, conditionally no.
Yeah,
what are the conditions we have to discuss? Otherwise, out of context, when you make that abstract question, to me, is not helpful at this stage.
I'd like to turn the clock back and spend the last 8 hours yesterday and wonder where some of us were. I would like anybody who didn't raise their hand to make a proposal.
I propose that we need to have some constricting factors. Constricting factors being any individual who's registering as a member has to declare, and we have to go on trust for what he says, and whether he is a member of the SO or not. If he is a member of the SO, then his individual membership should not be allowed by the ICANN board, and that let him exercise the option via the SO. But definitely not giving him double benefits.
You mean if he's an individual member of an SO?
Even if he's an individual member of the SO.
May I remember that the SOs within each also have this problem. I can be active in IETF and I can be active somewhere else, and nobody has anything against it. It's just the individual point. Oh, it goes further there. Even organizations, even companies could join the different ones.
You see, my apprehension is the first year, leave aside 1,000, I may possibly expect only 800. Out of 800, about 600 people would be from the SO. Then what kind of a worldwide representation are we talking about? We are making a mockery of the at-large membership in the first election. We must have basic practical realities in front of us. We just can't expect an at-large membership of about 150 or 200 to decide 5 board members, 9 at-large directors, and out of that 600 or 700 drawn from the SOs. Yeah.
What is wrong with anyone who has anything to do with ICANN being a member of that large? I really want to understand. Anybody from the SOs, company, individual,
anyone?
Yeah, I can't think of a problem with it.
My problem is that in reality, you will have the SOs electing all the members of the board. And that is not why we set up an at-large membership.
But not if you had a large at-large. I mean, after all, if people don't join up and participate, that's up to the individuals. It's up to us to get a lot of promotion going. It's up to us to, in each of our countries and regions of the world to make people understand the benefits of at large, because a lot of these people are not going to be, to flip it around, they don't have an opportunity to be part of an SO, maybe don't want to be part of an SO, but care enough to be part of at large. If we're successful at that, then I think the problem goes away. You are rightfully concerned up front, although I'll remind us, some people yesterday were pretty open about the fact that individuals can vote one way when they're part of an organization, and they can vote another way as an individual. And I remember two or three of you saying that, and I would suggest that that is the same, that if you believe that, that same principle applies against the scenario you're so worried about.
But the first people which will hear the promoting are the involved one, and we are considering a low fee. It's easy for everyone. He will
just duplicate his votes. And I would like to come back with one
sentence. Duplicate his votes for what?
Yeah. I don't like very much this idea of saying, oh, this one have to say and this other group only have to approve. That's not the reality. They just elect board members, and these board members will do something. That's reality. It will be easy for these ISPs. I'm an ISP. I'm always, maybe because I come from this part. They will join. It's easy. And they will have a bigger force. Obviously. That will happen.
I know, but what's your point? Let's say that the candidate is from Germany. Let's say he's the president of a German ISP.
No. At the end, they will decide something, yeah? Something. I guess that the meaning of all this construct is to discuss something, for example, a new GTLD, to make it practicable, and to decide if it is inserted. And that had a very practical impact on CCTLDs, for example. They would be idiots if they wouldn't do it.
I think we have to remember that the at-large membership is electing 9 at-large members under some very significant constraints about regional representation. Every candidate, theoretically, could be someone from with an SO background that gets elected anyway. I mean, I really think we're going to go, my personal bias is to allow any individual to be a member of the at-large membership, whether they participate in the SOs or not. The real objective of the at-large is to get a broader base of constituents. We are chartered to go after the very people that you have spoke so eloquently about yesterday.
Yes,
if we don't get them, shame on us.
This is why probably we must not have crossovers. And let me retract, because you mentioned membership, and my distinct question is on voting again. So I am not in favor of any individual voting for at-large directors. Because if you allow total crossover, you're not talking about at-large membership. You're just talking about membership, which is a very big difference in a way. You mean everybody involved with ICANN, maybe organizations and persons, on whatever count, within an SO, without an SO, is a member of the at-large membership. This is a very significant departure from my understanding of the purpose of that. So you need to check that there is no crossover for voting. I'm willing to discuss with anyone, whatever its origin, within an SO or within the membership. Otherwise, I think, if we don't do that, the risk is that the bad money will chase the good one again. That means you will have all the SO professionals coming to the at-large, and then saying, okay, you can come by hundreds, the others, and they will never come. They will find all those people discussing the same things that they've been discussing all day long with ununderstandable words and acronyms, and campaigning around those lines. Which means that even if there's not supposed to be substantive discussions and decisions in the at-large, the campaigning will be around that. So I do think that we have to stick fairly closely to the fact that what we want and who we want in the at-large are the users, the users who are not deeply involved, as I am, for example, in SO discussions around addresses or domain names, etc. This is the people we want. If we don't open the door very specifically for them and leave them almost all the room, they won't fill it.
I quite agree. And, well, I'm not too sure whether the making a very strict condition on cross, to prevent crossover
to vote for the directors is the only way to do it or not, or best way to do that or not. So that's why I said conditional. There are certain ways, say more, you know, depending on how initial board makes more proactive to encourage the broader participation or not. So, I mean, these legal institutions or bylaws are sort of sometimes act as a, you know, necessary condition, but it may not be sufficient, or the other way around. So that's why I said it depends. If you're so optimistic that, you know, even though you allow anybody to become any member of SOs and at large, and just they go vote for three times a year or four times perhaps, then the chances are the capture could happen, say, more easily. I don't mean that it would happen, it will happen definitely, but it can happen easily. In that case, what kind of safeguard or what kind of any other countermeasures is taken or not? That's sort of my worry, in line with how to ensure the broad-based participation other than the SOs. That's a basic question.
John, mindful of how little time we have left in this gathering, I just wanted to try to say Izumi's statement, which in a way mirrors Daniel's, it may be everybody can agree on the general principle that the whole point of the at-large membership is to be a catch-all, a separate catch-all from the constituencies already represented in the SOs, and then how much you need to actually guarantee it with various rules is certainly going to depend on where the SOs land and how it turns out. So to try to write the rules now just seems really hard to do because you don't know where they are, even if everybody agrees on the principle. So to link it up to two other topics that I know were on our to-do list, one is the idea of a quorum requirement. You could see some kind of quorum requirement that without explicitly excluding double membership would require that for it to be deemed a functional, legitimate at-large membership, it must have at least such percentage of members who are not doubly affiliated. And another thing would just be the sunrise provisions. To the extent that any membership structure is going to be tentative and we won't know how it will play out until you take registrations under it and then do some kind of census to see where your membership's at, how big it is, what the basic demographics are, you could work into that sunrise provision an idea, as I said before, if it turns out 95% of them are from the SOs, they're all the usual suspects, then you know that you don't have the same at-large membership that you do if it's a bunch of names that, you know, turn out to self-identify or be clearly, in some other way, identified as mere users rather than users and suppliers. So then I would just tie it to quorum and the sunrise provision as ways to deal with this and just say maybe we can agree on the principle even if it's impossible to get the mechanics down right now.
George, I agree with what Jonathan has summed up due to paucity of time, but I do feel once we are in agreement with the principles, we do need to possibly make a subgroup. We'll make a written report to the board, but possibly a subgroup of this very MAC with a legal background needs to have a look at it from the legal point of view, because a lot of provisions that we are discussing may not be standing water in the court of law. And I think we need to have that a look again, because whatever we are proposing is to the best of our capabilities, yet another independent scrutiny from the legal perspective would also be essential. And those of us who are having a legal background, we are more than willing to be of any assistance in that regard, because let's not propose something that may look to be diametrically likely to be quashed in any court of law.
I kind of want to supplement what Jonathan has said in the following way. I think we should not be waiting to see results of what the SOs are going to come out with. I mean, I really think if we do that, we might as well adjourn till they are done, and we probably may be ahead or about the same level as where they are. So I'm a little bit uncomfortable having to entertain that thought. So if I were to take the challenge first, the individual, I don't think I have any problems with the individual participating in any of the SOs, and as well as joining as an at-large member. Likewise, left to me alone, the organization should be excluded from the at-large, okay? Because it makes it very simple, lightweight. I don't have to do any checking. I don't have to worry. Okay. But assuming we accept them in the at-large, then it seems to me that, sure, then they can be anywhere because many organizations are multifaceted. They can be users. It's a different group probably. And they can be also suppliers of service in this area. So I think the numbers is really what we should go after, and that is what will balance up all of these concerns of, you know, cross, you know, multiple booths and so on. That's the way I see it.
I agree with me, and I think it's really up to each organization or individual to decide. An individual who would like to be an S, to join SO, had to pay. And similarly for organization, once they want to join at large member, they have to pay high fee. So if they like to do that, it's their choice. I think it should be open.
Okay, we have I didn't realize that. We have 10 minutes. Let's look at the list here for a moment. What haven't we discussed at all? The Fishkin model. Does anybody have the stomach to talk about the Fishkin model? Goodbye, Fishkin model.
Okay. Yeah, the question
is...
No, the question was, if we don't discuss it now, do we agree, I agree, that it is not to be discussed at all? and not just that we're pushing it for our next meeting.
No.
Okay.
Danielle's recommendation is to eliminate number 9, the Fishkin model.
What is it?
Okay, I can tell you briefly about it before we kiss it goodbye. We don't even know what we're sending down the river, but whatever, let's throw it as much as we can. It must make it easier not to know.
Exactly.
That could be Moses in the basket.
Right.
To me, the Fishkin model is most useful just as a way to think about capture, which is a subject that probably people don't want to completely forget about because it's such an important principle. And the way I think about it is with a story that Jim Fishkin, who's the guy who made the Fishkin model, tells. And he tells the story of Time wanted to know their person of the year, and they had others, in fact, of the century. Time did a contest to see what people thought of as the best leader of the century, the best warrior of the century, who was the best politician of the century, et cetera, et cetera. They had the most beautiful person of the century, a bunch of categories. And they asked for internet votes on the issue. And by the time they were done taking the tally, one person had won every single category. It turned out to be Mustafa Khalil Ataturk, a famed Turkish person in Turkish history. As the votes were coming in and Ataturk was so well favored, the Greeks were very upset and mounted a belated campaign for Winston Churchill, who seemed to be the only person who might be able to overcome, at least in the statesman category, the number of votes. Now, the story was not that one person had voted multiple times, but that the one constituency, those in Turkey who were very much favoring this, managed to mobilize and be passionate and answer the question, which was meant to be a global question of who is the best, with their answer in each category. And to me, that story says, is that or is that not capture of the process? On one hand, you may say it's not capture because, after all, everybody had a chance to vote.
That's my argument.
And if you assume there's no vote fraud, it just simply went to those who were cared enough to go onto the site and cast their vote.
Right.
On the other hand, if you think that the answer to the question isn't based necessarily only on passion, what Fred Wertheimer at our meeting called just the activists, but instead you want the answer to represent the actual belief of most people around the world as to what should happen, even if they're lazy or bored or they don't fully understand, by that definition, it is capture. And he offers a model, if you agree with the second proposition, that it is capture, meant to get around it. So I agree, it's not doesn't seem to me that we want to be talking about whether his model could work as an at-large electoral mechanism, but it was the first time to me that I thought of capture in this way, and I have gone back and forth in my own view as to whether the Ataturk example is an example of a fair dessert earned by people who organized to take it, or if it was a capture of the process. So,
how would I use a fishy model use case, for example?
You didn't tell how it works, you did tell for what it is.
Yes. Okay, but very briefly, the Fishkin model is meant to take a poll of people without needing to talk to every person on the planet. And what he does when he runs what he calls a deliberative poll is he gets a random sampling of people, and then he brings them to one place or otherwise talks to them at length about the issue, has them discuss it, much as the Mac, in some ways, is just that. And then at the end of the process, votes are taken and people come up with ideas, and what comes out of that, he argues, is a more balanced representation of what people would think if only they had the time to sit on the Mac as well, as compared to if you had the Mac self-selecting. What that was
not if you do it 2 days in a row, John.
Yes.
We saw what happened if you do deliberative polling 2 days in a row.
And you get different answers.
You get different answers.
It just happened.
Okay, goodbye, Fishkin model.
If we won't continue this for, let's say, 3 or 4 years, we should start discussing this.
I'm as happy as anybody.
John can help me out here. What have we not fully discussed? Anybody on the committee? Sunrise and sunset. We have
sunrise.
Yeah.
Sunrise. Because the initial implementation of whatever principles we may define can defeat the principles.
Right. Do you have a recommendation?
Well, I don't know. I think all the things we have been discussing today concerning duplication of votes, this sort of thing. If we can't somehow guarantee that we start with, let's say, 10,000 individual members in the first year, I think we're okay. So I think sunrise provisions are critical. Unless we do find a way, or we can propose a way which more or less ensure that we start well off, I think we're doomed. So I think that's really critical. So you made a question, and my answer is I don't know.
Yeah. The one thought I have on the sunrise model, and let me just put it out so it's a specific proposal that can be rejected or talked about, would be once the criteria for membership are set out and that is decided, this is the initial model we want, you take registrations for a period of time, say 60 days or 90 days, and with that you have outreach, you do everything you want to do to try to get your membership really rolling. At the end of the 90 days, you look to see what the demographics of that membership is, and that's data you should already have in hand because people filled it out, if you trust them at least, in the membership registration form, and you know it was authenticated however it was authenticated. You run the demographics and you see, do you have a broad international base, or does it turn out that most of the members, for some reason, happen to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma? That accounts for 800, and the other 50 are spread around the world. You can look along a variety of dimensions to see, do you have the kind of membership that consensus would have is truly a broad-based, at-large membership. If you do, then you take those who have asked to be members and you then formally, legally, so name them, and you conduct the first election. If you don't, and you, I guess in this case, it's in the initial board's lap to decide that they don't, and you can imagine the potential heat for rejecting this nascent membership to be, but if you don't, that's the chance to say, here's the demographics we have, for these reasons we don't find it having reached the goals, and either we need to leave membership registration open for a few more months because there's only 20 members, we want to see if we can get more, or we need to make the following changes to the model and grandfather in those who have already signed up if that's appropriate. So that's my proposal.
And I would say more. Let me, for example, concerning membership fees, we have at least two extremely distinct proposals here. No fee for all, zero, or everybody should pay something. Well, if you consider that there is an initial period, sunrise provisions, the way you're saying, and we decide that nothing is going to be charged during this period, actually, we probably will arrive at a consensus on what a membership fee structure should be later on without much problems, because we can be more or less assured that we are going to have a period to test our ideas. So I think even decisions concerning membership fee structure are going to be conditioned by how we decide on these sunrise provisions or whatever.
I suggest a variation, Jonathan, is not to have a period in which you don't enroll applicants until you see how it's going, but you enroll them. The point is, when will the board decide that the membership is broad enough to hold an election? And if it's not getting applications for membership from a wide enough constituency, it'll have to take some action to try and stimulate interest. But I don't think that a sunrise provision whereby the board decides whether it likes it or not is going to be very palatable.
It's definitely easier to take the heat if you define these parameters before.
Yes?
What I say is, in my personal, very personal opinion, if we get to have 10,000 individual members, no SO people will dominate the process. That's my assumption. Okay?
That's the point of the 10,000.
But it might be very difficult to reach that from Africa. So should we wait till and think 1,000 for one region, right?
Yeah. So what if it takes much more time?
I'm not too sure if 1,000 is enough. Also, it depends on how much you have to pay or free. So in implementation, we should be a bit careful about that if we are to do that.
Gunjana.
How about we start off with using ratio between SO members who are at-large members and PO at-large members. So let's say the broad at-large member is Y and people who belong to SO as well as X. So X, the ratio of X over Y should be point less. At the very beginning, maybe 50%, and then you can go down gradually.
Thank you.
I understood.
Okay. I think that's it for this round. You better come to the meeting tomorrow and see what I report. Thank you all.
Be a go, George.
Right. Thank you all very much.
George, where is the meeting tomorrow?
I don't know. I do know.
Extension Center. Suntec.
Good. I have it in here.
Suntec. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. 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 Yeah.